Happy Friday, kiddos. You're listening to The Intersection. I'm Clint Yates. L. Duncan's here, of course. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests on the show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Listen, y'all, this is a friendly day.
Yes.
Our screen door is closed, but the door is open. So come on up. Reach us at 1-888-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. You can find me on Twitter at Clinton Yates. You can find L on Twitter at L Duncan ESPN. Of course, today is Juneteenth. Juneteenth is a holiday celebration-ish. And, oh, you know what? Why don't you tell them the history lesson as to what exactly Juneteenth is about, since you're the newest learner of said holiday. And I say this in all seriousness because we'll get to that later. But Juneteenth, tell them what it is.
Yeah, so by new he means that it really popped into my purview over the last 10 years, and I think a lot of that is because of social media, to be perfectly honest. So Juneteenth is when the very last of the slaves in this country found out that they had been emancipated technically 2.5 years earlier. They just didn't know. It was in Galveston, Texas, and they were finally officially freed. It was when the Emancipation Proclamation was read to them. There are certain questions as to why it took that long, but according to Juneteenth.com and The Undefeated as well, the reason is because there just was not a considerable amount. In fact, there was no Union soldiers there to sort of enforce it. So it was one of those telephone, let's see if it gets to the blacks out in Texas, and it didn't for 2.5 years. And then when it finally did, they found out, and they promptly dropped everything and ran.
Unbelievable. I mean, just think about that.
Yep.
Just in itself, on its own. You've been enslaved your whole life. And it's like, oh, actually, you're free. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, BT dubs.
But sidebar, you're free. Oh, also, it happened 2 years ago, so
Correct. Our
bad. The reason we bring that up is this. Is because for a lot of different people, you mentioned that you learned about it through social media recently. And I only say recently because it's old. You know, my grandmother is from Oklahoma. That's why I know what Juneteenth is. You know, next to Texas. And so when I was a kid, I remember she taught me about Juneteenth, but it wasn't like celebratory, just so people understand. Old black folks from the 80s weren't thinking about that in any kind of way that was necessarily all that positive because, again, 2 years enslaved when actually free. That's a, I mean, I can't even sort of contemplate what that existence is like. However, I guess what it means to me now, it's just a very, how do I say this? Because people are just now learning what Juneteenth is, it's a very interesting parallel to what Juneteenth is, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? It took forever for people to learn that actually it took forever for people to learn that they were free.
Sure.
And that's really kind of odd to me because in Texas, it's a big deal. In certain parts of the country, it's a big deal. We'll talk to Bomani Jones about that later in the program. But I don't know that Juneteenth to me at this stage from what it is in past is a super celebratory moment. Now, that is shifting. I will give that credit. I actually am kind of impressed with this pivot, to be quite honest, because from a branding standpoint, and I know that sounds weird to talk about, if we get ourselves a Black Independence Day, okay. You know what I mean? It doesn't really matter. I don't want to say it doesn't really matter, but what matters is that we have found a space in which to express ourselves for ourselves, to ourselves, by ourselves. And by ourselves, I mean from ourselves, not only amongst ours. You know, so that to me is the larger sort of takeaway from this, is that if we're going to use Juneteenth to celebrate each other, okay, that's fine by me. You know, it could have been Kwanzaa. Could have been around MLK Day. It's not. You know what I mean? But that's fine. Juneteenth is going to work for me. And I want people to understand this. And like I said, we're going to have Bo on to talk about this later. Juneteenth is a historical moment that for me identifies exactly what is wrong with America and what was wrong with America.
Correct.
I'm sorry, kind of sad to think about
just,
sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, to your point, I love the fact that people are sort of turning this into an emblematic day of liberation for black people, but I just can't stop thinking about the lives that were lost, the families that were decimated, the atrocities that were done in that 2.5 years, and to know that it just was as simple as, oh yeah, no one ever came and read it. Like, to me, it's a stark reminder of a couple of things. It's a stark reminder of the fact that our education system fails us in many regards because a lot of people, black, white, and other, didn't know about Juneteenth. It's a stark reminder that we sort of pick things up in American history with like slavery and the Civil War, and then we just like jump to the civil rights movement without really the ugly underbelly to what you know, white insecurity looked like for many, many, many years that caused the death of so many black people who were just trying to put their lives together and thrive. And to your point, it's a reminder of how slow this country can be to change and how when it comes to the liberties and freedom of black people, it's like, we'll get there when we get there. And so, yeah, I know this is supposed to be more hopeful and I'm supposed to be more optimistic. And I love that black people have always found a way to sort of turn things that are sad into something joyful. And today I've been tweeting black joy, you know, in honor of Juneteenth. But to your point, I'm not sure that I'm in a, you know, a picnic and like Frankie Beverly and Maze kind of mood.
For those of you who don't know what that means, when black people get together at the cookout and they play the Frankie Beverly and Maze, it's when your aunts and your uncles tell you, you don't know nothing about this.
You don't
and then they get out
this.
On the dance floor and embarrass themselves and you go side in the house with your cousins. That's what Correct. Happens. You're Correct. Listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. I'm Clinton Yates. She's L. Duncan. I mean, look, my favorite thing about this, though, is my sister. She's 20. She goes, Juneteenth sounds like something millennials made up. And I'm like, you're kind of
like
right.
Auto toast.
No, but like the name itself, like the word, you know, I'm like, that's, but you know, the idea is that you didn't really know when in June it was. And so it became Juneteenth. But like, it's funny because old brands getting refreshed. And I know that sounds kind of ridiculous in the context of history, but like, it's actually a thing. Like if the word Juneteenth wasn't going to hit with the kids, we wouldn't be doing this.
Sure.
You know, and in our spoken history of who we are, in our written history of who we are, that's kind of what matters to me more than anything. It's like that word has survived. You know, somebody's going to name their kid Juneteenth in the next calendar year.
Okay,
that's
going
to be real.
You didn't have to. You didn't. And his sister going to be named, or his brother's going to be named Quarantino? Is that where we're at with that?
Nah.
Be
obviously, the sister would be named Rona. I mean, what are you even talking about here, Al? What are we doing? Trying to have a radio show here and you're making stupid jokes. No, I'm kidding. No, the reason I say that is because if we're going to be looking at this from a standpoint of fun, we have to be able to understand this in the vision of 2020. And this is one of those things where, like, I'm old enough to have seen enough things where I'm not going to hold on to what it was when I was young. If kids right now or younger people right now or really anybody right now wants to take Juneteenth and make it their celebration of their blackness for who they are, I will take it. That is fine by me. That looks good for me on everybody else. And ultimately, I ain't going to be mad at black folks celebrating themselves. Never that.
Right. Or a free holiday. You know what I mean? Fine. Cool. That's fine. Just don't close the banks, restaurants, or anything that we like to do. But yes, give us the day off from work. I'm good with that.
I mean, hold on. You're not having a cookout next year? The Juneteenth cookout?
I'm always looking for a reason to have a cookout. Are you joking?
Right. I was like, why are you lying to America talking about we ain't going to be playing no Frankie Beverly and Maze? We're not going to be doing anything. You know full well you're going to have the babies running around and it's going to be fun.
Before
I might actually make a trip to your house to do that.
You won't. You're out in Cali living the life. Speaking of Cali, can we talk to the California of the North, South Dakota? I don't know why. That was the worst transition of all time. But we do encourage you to call us at 1-888-SAY-ESPN. That's 1-888-729-3776. Remember that all guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil performance line. We've got someone on the phone line, Clinton, that is conflicted. Matt from South Dakota. Matt, why are you conflicted about 18th?
The California of the North. That was great. You know, and I've been listening to Clinton on today on Will Cain and the last show, Spain and Company. And you know, just as I'm calling in saying I'm conflicted about these things, you know, the message kind of rang in again. Is like kind of. For me to kind of shut your mouth and listen. I called in so quick, and as I was listening to you guys to get to my call, so much of it kind of came to me, and it was like, you know, just as a white person, so much can be attained through education and just listening. You know, it's been my friend. I didn't know anything about Juneteenth until a few days ago when he sat me down and said, you know, this is what Juneteenth means. You know, it was the last state, Texas was the last state in the Union to formally abolish slavery. And so on a day like today, a little bit of me is still conflicted on, you know, it feels like a celebration to me, something that should be celebrated. But to me, it still feels like something that America still got wrong, something we look back on and be like, yes, it was abolished, but slavery was abolished in the last state, but it took almost 2-3 years to actually do it.
Thanks for the phone call, Matt. Appreciate it. All right. You want to give us a ring? 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. Elle, do you have anything before we get to the next segment?
No. I think Matt said it all.
Coming up, did you celebrate Juneteenth today? If you did, what did you do? Tell us. You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. You're listening to The Intersection with Clinton Yates and Elle Duncan on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. Of course, we're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. If you got something to say, we encourage you to join the conversation. Hit me up, dog. 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. If you want to come at me on Twitter and roll the dice, at Clinton Yates, or you can holler at L Duncan ESPN. Now, of course, we're discussing Juneteenth. That's today. We're trying to find out what y'all did to celebrate Juneteenth. Of course, we had the discussion about what exactly people are doing or whether or not they found out about Juneteenth, I don't know, yesterday or the week before or the month before. However, a lot of people around the sports world were getting it done, including the Wizards and the WNBA champion Washington Mystics. Bradley Beal talked to the undefeated on the street today with his teammates, and he told a story about what it was like with a run-in with a police officer early in his career.
Got pulled over while I was in the league here because of my tents, and that caused reason for me to get out of the car, sit on the side of the highway, and then for him to tell me I can F up your Monday headline on ESPN by arresting you right now. And so I didn't do anything, and it didn't cause for him to say that, but that was just really an eye-opener for me that, you know, it could happen to anybody at any time.
For those of you who don't know, Bradley Beal's a guard for the Wizards, tremendous basketball player, nice family man. Bradley Beal is not a knucklehead. Not that that even matters. But Bradley Beal is not the kind of dude who, in my opinion, would portray anything as anything other than what it was. Now, for those of you who don't understand why he's explaining why that's important, is because it's a very simple thing that happens in the interaction between police officers, oftentimes the black folks, which is the authority flex is also an ego flex that really has nothing to do with the application of the law. And that's exactly what Brad was describing. He straight up said to this dude, because he knew he was in the NBA and he knew who he was and he knew his position as a power, as an officer, I can mess you up if I want to. Now think about going through your whole life like that with basically everybody who doesn't look like you. Then we begin to get to what the feeling is like to look like us when you walk through America. Elle, what did you think about what Bradley Beal had to say?
It was funny because it actually reminded me of when I was 16 years old and I, you know, got my first car, you know, my pimped out Dodge Avenger. Nice. My system cost more than the actual car did. But I had a little change, so I wanted to get some mirror tint. And in Georgia, I don't know if it's still this way, but at the time when I was in high school 100 years ago, it was not a secondary offense having tint. Like it was a first offense. Like if they, to Bradley Beal's point, if they thought your tint was too dark or if your tint was too mirrored, you could be potentially pulled over. And I'll never forget going to the body shop to have the tent pulled on, and I was very lucky that it was a brother that was there, and he looked at me and he was like, sister, the tent that you asked for is the tent that's going to get you into trouble. Like, let me take you two notches down. You know, and I'm complaining. I'm like, yeah, but you can still see in. Like, I want to be able to do my makeup in the tent. That's how much I want it to be mirror tinted. And he was like, trust me, you don't want the trouble that comes along with you being on a road late at night and them having any reason to pull you over. And again, Clinton, like, I fully recognize, you know, I talked about this the other day. We were talking about Philando Castile. I was a registered gun owner in Georgia, and I got pulled over for speeding an Alpharetta. And I remember when the cop came, it was the middle of the day, but when the cop came over to my window, the first thing I said to him was, sir, I'm a registered gun owner. I have a permit to carry, and I have my gun in my glove compartment. He was like, okay. He instructed me exactly what to do. Open the glove compartment. What kind of gun is it? I said, it's a 38 revolver. He said, okay. Do you know how to open the chamber? I said, of course. So he's like, open it, point the barrel at yourself, keep it open, hand it to me. I did all of those things. I got a warrant. morning. He gave me my gun back. In fact, he joked I needed to get it cleaned because I had taken it to the range a couple of
times.
Hardy har, you know. But I fully recognize even the privilege of being a light-skinned black woman and still not being perceived as a threat. Philando Castile, in that exact same situation, lost his life. And so, you know, to hear Bradley Beal say something like that and to know that someone could try and A, mess with your career, but to your point, try to exert their power, just try to dehumanize you by letting you know your lot in life. Like, you may be, put you in your place. You may be rich, you may be famous, but I still have the power to F with you if I want to.
You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80. I'm Clint Yates. She's Elle Duncan. By the way, the Wizards and the Mystics, the players led a march from Capital One Arena all the way down to Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. Relatively long walk. So I'm proud of them for doing that. Check out that on The Undefeated if you want to get to that. 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. Adrian in Texas, what's going on, Playboy?
Hey, what's going on?
You're on the
air. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I'm from Texas. And I was just going to give like another little history that they leaving out, really, like Fort Hood. Fort Hood really should keep its name because of the name Killeen. And the family that used to own it, they pretty much, instead of letting those slaves run free, they tried to kill all of them. And the union had to come in, take over all the land, and Killeen actually stands for kill each and every Negro. You know, so, and that family was real, real cruel, and they killed every single man and child in the family and took that whole land over. That's how we end up getting Fort Hood, and that's how it ended up being the biggest army base, you know, in the United States. So that's one call. I think they should leave a name to.
I appreciate that. You know, the history of different naming things is a very interesting one. I wrote a column today on The Undefeated about how they snatched down a couple statues. We'll get to that later in the show. But that concept, L, what do you think about that in terms of, like, renaming stuff? I think renaming things and pulling down statues are two sort of different things. One is not more necessary than the other, but they are different tasks in terms of how they remove things from society. Where are you on this?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I am from Georgia, so almost every major street is either named by a black dignitary or a Confederate soldier or general. You know, I understand this idea, you know, from people that, like, you can't erase history by renaming things and what does it matter and whatnot. But here's my thing. It's so innocuous. Do you actually care about what something is called until someone tries to take it from you? And when someone tries to take it from you, why suddenly do you care? You know, I guess that could go both ways. Like, listen, I'm going to turn on Bankhead Highway, whether I'm going to turn on Bankhead Highway or not, right? And it's named, you know, there's areas of it where it's Hollowell and whatnot. But I do feel it's different than sort of these monument and these structures that are sort of, you know, built to be these symbols of whatever, the past, the history, and whatnot.
Supremacy. But
correct. Supremacy, straight up. But I find it to be one of those things where it almost feels like people only care when you do try to take them down. Does it make sense?
Right. It definitely makes sense. I mean, statues to me, this has been a very strange part of this because this whole process, because I've been trying to practice some sort of self-care with all this, so I don't watch a ton of chalk talk about them killing us in the streets. But these statue rip-downs have been emotional. Mm-hmm. People are out there tearing things down and throwing them in the rivers. And the first time I saw it, I was like, whoa, like, defacing something is, you know, that's fine by me, but I'm saying that there's something about the physical element of taking down such a large thing that to me means a lot more than just changing the name on things. And I know we looked at Clemson University where, you know, things have changed over the course of time and they're changing names, and that's all fine. But there is something very specifically meaningful about pulling down a statue that makes me think that we should probably do it for all these jokers. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Right, you know? Take them down.
No need for me to, I mean, you know, I don't need to look at that. Nobody who knows or cares about these people is alive. So what are we doing? Coming up, Bomani Jones joins the show. You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. I'm Clinton Yates. She's Elle Duncan. All right, kiddos. It's The Intersection with Clinton Yates. That's me, Elle Duncan. That's her. We're on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. All guests are presented via the Shaw Pennzoil Performance Line. And joining us right now on said line is Bomani Jones. Host of the Right Time with Bomani Jones. Bomani Jones is from Texas. Bo, happy Juneteenth. What's good, player?
Hey, really good, man. How are you?
I'm well. You know, you're the one from Texas. I thought you'd have, you know, I don't know, confetti and whatever going on or whatever
special
drink y'all
Juneteenth
make.
Special Juneteenth outfit.
Right. What's happening, yo?
So, like, the two things that I associate with Juneteenth and that celebratory fashion, somebody go make a brisket and you drink Big Red soda. Like, those are the two things. That's how it goes. I don't really have access to either of those at this moment, so I'm just chilling out at the house.
I love that about you, Bo. I think, too, you kind of hit the nail on the head with your tweet earlier where you basically were like, yo, and it got a big response, too, where you were like, yo, it's okay if you don't know much about Juneteenth, if it just popped into your purview, because there's a lot of people that didn't know anything about it. Being from Atlanta, Georgia, but also being from Texas, because we still claim you, Bo. Was this a largely regional thing for you? Because I told Clinton, like, this is something that, and it's not just me, you know, I've talked to the old heads that are like, yo, this popped up in my purview in the last maybe 10, 15, 5 years, 3 years ago. What was sort of Juneteenth, what does it mean to Texas?
All right, so I remember we moved to Houston when I was 7, and the next year over, somebody was talking about Juneteenth, and I thought they were saying June 10th. Like, I just couldn't make sense of this idea that you kept calling it June 10th, but it's somehow June 19th. Like, I really struggled with that idea until it was explained to me. I was a proper child. So, it was something I was not aware of, and I grew up in a blackety black house, right? Like, it's not like, you know, we were up on what the black people were doing, and I didn't know about that until I got to Texas. I mean, it's a Texas holiday when you think about it, right? The entire concept of it, like, you can say now, we weren't all free until all of us were free. Wasn't nobody saying that when they got free. Right? When they got free, they was like, yo, you know, I hope this works out for everybody else. I might even do a little something to help.
I'm out.
But free, that's what I am. Like, wasn't everybody Harriet Tubman, right? So This is a decidedly Texas activity. And I asked a few days ago on Twitter, I asked people, like, so when did Juneteenth become this thing everywhere? And people were responding to me and saying, well, like in Milwaukee, for example, they were saying there's a big Juneteenth thing in Milwaukee. I think people said in Oakland or one of the towns around Oakland. They said there's a big Juneteenth picnic every year there. And I'm hearing that, and I'm like, okay, this is what y'all are understanding. I don't think of Houston as having a big Juneteenth picnic, right? It's Juneteenth. Everybody's having one. It's like saying it's a 4th of July picnic. You know, like, right. It's that kind of occasion. So that, yeah, it's been interesting for me to see. And it's good. You know, if people choose to celebrate it, and that's what they want to do, that is certainly fine, but it's going to be a while before I shake the idea myself that this is something that is decidedly regional, and I don't mean that as a bad thing.
You're listening to The Intersection. I'm Clinton Yates. She's L. Duncan. Bomani Jones, host of The Right Time with Bomani Jones, joins us. But I wanted to continue on that point, Bo, which is that, like, of the power rankings of, like, black holidays, not only is Juneteenth regional, it ain't even on the top. Like, I mean, do you not that did you hold any issue with, but, like, transposing the total idea of black independence on Juneteenth. Is that the right day for you? Or do you think that this makes sense? I mean, beyond trying to knock anybody, it's just, it's an interesting application of something that we're trying to celebrate for the day that we're putting it on.
Yeah, well, look, my dad always makes this point about holidays, man. You don't really need a good reason to do it. You know, like, we're not sitting around reading the Declaration of Independence on July 4th. Nope. You're firing up the grill. You're just kind of kicking it. You know, like, Memorial Day, because of this new push that we have on the military, like, people push that as, you know, a remember the reason for the season type situation on that. They do that a little bit more. But ultimately, man, people ain't really just walking around all day thinking about the fallen soldiers. They're barbecuing. You know, it's just kind of what it is. And so I think that people are, in a lot of ways, I don't want to say rationalizing, but this is like, hey, this is a reason and a time to celebrate the black experience. And I see it as being appropriate for people in a broader sense to appreciate and celebrate. I kind of worry about what happens when it gets to be this mainstream concept. But I think that overall, the intention behind what we're seeing with this increased emphasis on Juneteenth is positive. It's just funny because I'm talking to white people about it, and they just really don't know what to do right now in talking about Juneteenth. It's like, I'm ashamed that I did not know. Calm down, man. It ain't that deep.
Right. Correct. It's not exactly like you didn't know MLK had a day.
But they're telling me stuff, and they're like, well, I see all kinds of people saying this. Like, why isn't this taught in schools? Because if you're not from Texas, this doesn't really matter historically in that way. Like, I'm sure there's all kinds of things that have happened in different parts of the country that are of similar type of significance that I don't know, because it really matters to the locals, you know? Like, as far as things that we have not learned, Juneteenth is way, way, way low on the list.
You are listening to Bomani Jones right now on The Intersection with Clinton Yates and L. Duncan. Again, we encourage you guys to call. You can reach us at 1-888-729-3776. Bo, it's funny because a lot of people are saying, a lot of black folks are saying, you know, what we're out here in the streets protesting for, like what we're asking for is criminal justice reform and sweeping changes in the way our communities police and better access to health care. Basically, we're trying to dismantle systemic racism. And a lot of responses, tell you what, give you Juneteenth off and we'll celebrate. And like, here's a fun hashtag and emoji. Do you feel like a lot of this for corporations that are now sort of recognizing Juneteenth and saying, we'll tell you what, we'll give you the day off, we'll make it a holiday. You feel like this is a little bit more performative than anything else?
I think it kind of depends on who you're talking about. Like, I do think that in times like these, after enough companies decide that they're going to do something, it makes you look bad if you don't. And so there is a like tendency to follow up that may not have any sort of like real ethos behind it. They're just kind of worried about the way it looks. I think that happens to some people. But like right before I got on this call, I was talking to a buddy of mine about the company that he works at where they got Juneteenth off. But he was also talking about like real substantive things that are happening behind the scenes and pushes that are being made and progress within a lot of these companies that employees are pushing for themselves that are really happening right now. And so for some of these companies, giving the holiday was not simply, I think, a performance. I mean, I think for some it's obviously going to be, right? And I don't have any that I can point to in particular, but I would imagine, just knowing the way the world works, that for some of them it will be a performance. But I also think that for some companies right now, I believe that for them it's a show of good faith. That, you know, this is an indication to them that they are listening, whether it be on this little thing that isn't that hard for them to do necessarily. But it is something that is being done. Like, I think that people, I don't think it's simply being thrown out there as like a pacifier. Not generally.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about these kind of things, because we always tend to talk about it in terms of like peers and like adults. But I think of kids, you know what I mean? And like there, if this becomes a thing, if you're 15, you know what I'm saying? Like, whatever knowledge you're going to get enters the consciousness. And the reason I bring that up, Bo, is because I was talking to my sister, who's 20, the other day, and she said, Juneteenth sounds like a word millennials made up. Like, it's funny to me how that word to me means something so old, but it can still brand itself right now. And it's like pretty, it rides. You know what I'm saying? Like, that word doesn't sound that ridiculous for something that is, in fact, completely ancient in terms of, you know, black history.
Yeah, but it's a matter of time until they start spelling it J-N-T-N-T-H, right?
Oh,
like that's going to happen. Like, the one thing I say about kind of the mainstreaming this is, if you want to do that, that's cool, but it's not really something that I need. Like, at least for me on this, we don't necessarily need the validation of anything larger to speak to the significance of what the occasion is. Like, it's kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around the idea that some people are going to, quote unquote, celebrate this when they don't necessarily think this is something worthy of being celebrated. Like, they might think it's a cool idea, but if it resonates with you, then it's something that you should do. But what we're going to end up with here is a lot of people, hey, there's going to be a measure of commercialization, I think, as this goes forward. But you're also just going to have people that are jumping on this, and like, really, it's okay if you don't. Right? Like, you don't have to pretend in this case. I personally am not offended because my holiday doesn't necessarily have to be yours. Like my dad always said about the Martin Luther King holiday, and he didn't really care so much if it passed because he was going to take it regardless. You know, this in my mind is kind of one of those, you know, so if it's what you want to do, that's cool. But if it's not, I'm not terribly offended by it.
Note to self, cancel Juneteenth t-shirt order.
Correct,
okay.
Exactly. So, yeah. Get all the merchandise back.
Those aren't going to sell.
Maybe take back your trademark license. Bomani Jones, before we let you go, I do want to ask you, because we've had some conversations offline, but is there something that's told you or something that's lent itself over the last couple of weeks to make you believe that maybe this time is different as it relates to sustained momentum for the causes that black people have been fighting for so long?
I guess there's one thing, because this has been a series of things that have popped up at different points. Now, you know, it's like, oh, wow, really? But as I think about it, a lot of them are still at the level of being symbolic. You know, like the Roger Goodell thing, which I think was a little bit more than symbolic, but still was like, yo, people are out here really figuring out ways to make some things happen in this. I have been expecting, like, some event to pop up that creates a wider, like, white backlash, or white people get to a point of just being like, all right, I've had enough, because that typically happens with groups of privilege, regardless. Like, we can talk about that with men. We can talk about that with straight people. Like, well, okay, all right, now, damn, I got to do this. That hasn't happened yet. And, I mean, that's been stunning to me that this has gone on for this long and that hasn't happened. Like, I think that people are really I don't even know if it's the majority, but it's enough people to make a difference that seem to really be doing some measure of introspection and looking at where we can go from here. And, I mean, the times themselves have been kind of exhausting, but I have to say, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I can tell you right now, Bo, what the tipping point would be for white folks to be like, enough, is one word: reparations.
Hey now, all right. Yeah. He's Bomani Jones.
I'm already hearing it.
Of the Right Time with Bomani Jones. Thank you, Bo.
All right, now.
I'm already hearing it, Clinton. I'm already hearing it. Yeah, absolutely. I've already got, you know, white colleagues and friends that are like, now they're starting to talk about reparations. What does that mean? I'm starting to, now we got to pay y'all? I'm just saying, when that conversation starts becoming part of the lexicon, that's going to be the tipping point.
The operative word there is now. Coming up, why George Preston Marshall statue got removed in D.C. And I'll tell you why that's important, because that's my hometown. You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. You're listening to The Intersection with Clinton Yates and L. Duncan on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. Of course, the program is presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. You want to hit us up? 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. Quickly, he's been on the line for a minute. Oswaldo, what's going on out in New Mexico?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm really glad that you guys are doing this. I hope it sticks. That's what makes culture. That's why we have culture, is we get people on. They make a great show. People listen. They need to listen. Matt had a great point. If you don't know what to do, then just stop and listen. Because even for me to get on a phone call with you right now, I'm a Hispanic male. I have to pull over in a very safe place for me, because if I get pulled over by a police officer, or if I'm in a neighborhood where they don't think I belong, I get treated different.
Thanks for the phone call. Real talk on that. Getting treated like you don't belong. Mm-hmm. Think about that when you think about things like the verbiage that police use when they talk to people about what they're doing and why they're there. The basic concept of belonging in a place. If you don't know what that goes back to, go ahead on, take a trip down to D.C. Go ahead on to Blacksonian. You'll find out. Most municipal police departments were based on a little system we like to call slave patrols. That's just the historical fact. So the basic concept of what are you doing here is rooted in something that's messed up. Speaking of D.C., though, down at RFK Stadium, the stadium where I watched many a game in the NFL, many more a game in MLS, and plenty a game of the U.S. Men's National Team and the Nationals, World Series champion Washington Nationals, played their first season in D.C. there. Some of you might not know this, though. The guy who invented the name, the racial slur that I don't say, of the Washington National Football League team, he's a guy named George Preston Marshall, known segregationist, by the by, who also made sure that that team was the final integrated team in the league. The reason why he did it? Well, the federal government stepped in and said, dog, your stadium's on federal land. We might have to hem this whole daggone thing up if you don't get a brother. So he did. That's how that happened. 5 years ago, when I was writing for the Washington Post, I walked my butt down to RFK. And I said, why is this thing still here? I asked all the people. And I don't mean people walking around town. I mean the group that runs RFK. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of who it is. It's basically a D.C. government group. And I was like, yo, like, why is it still here? Homeboy was a known racist. On top of the fact that he named his team something racist. And y'all just got this thing standing out here? What are we doing? And I'll never forget the executive director of the group at the time. He said, I don't really know. Nobody really asked before. Not really sure. And I was like, I mean, I know you'd only been there for, I mean, he'd only been there for a couple of years, but he's from D.C. He was the brother who was just thinking about it, and he was like, I can't come up with a good reason why this is here. They tore that bad boy down today, and I was very happy to see it. Very plainly. Forget about us being a fan of anything that happened at RFK Stadium. Just as a black person in America, George Preston Marshall don't need no plaque anywhere in my city whatsoever. And as a sidebar, by the way, for those of you who don't know why the Minnesota Twins exist, it's because their owner at the time straight up said, I don't want black people coming to my baseball games. And there are a lot less black folks in Minnesota then than there were a lot less black folks in Minnesota then than there are now. The Minnesota Twins would not exist if it weren't for a racist dude who decided to move his team from D.C. They tore his statue down today, too. Let me tell you something. We ain't getting a whole lot of things in terms of progress that happened. Some things we can point to that we can look at and we can say, that's real. But for me, personally, a sports fan from D.C., today was massively emotional. Straight up, L. You know what I'm saying? Like, there were two things that represented different parts of the different sports world, but it was like, man, I didn't even really know how to feel. I was happy, but like, it's almost like you've been waiting for something for so long and you get it. What do? It's a weird feeling, Laura.
Okay. You say that, but, you know, to me, we were just talking with Bomani about this idea of, you know, pacifying people. And this feels a little bit like trying to pacify the people that cared less about that statue. You know, again, I'm not from D.C. It obviously means something different for you. But it seems like it's more about, like, let's just give them a little something because we refuse to change this damn name. That's what people care about. They don't care about that stupid statue. They care about the insignia. They care about the branding, the logo. They care about the fact that, like, in our world, even when I hear a co-host sort of say it, and it is their name, like sort of say it, I sort of clench, you know what I mean? And like, you have to be very overt about making sure that you don't say that name because it's a like that to me is the real issue. So you're saying and telling me that you can sort of compartmentalize and say, hey, this is still a step in the right direction. It's still a significant and means something, because to me, it just feels like Daniel Snyder essentially being like, I'll give you that, but I'm not messing with my trademarks. I'm not messing with the financial ramifications, because taking that statue down does not affect his bottom line, but completely changing the name does.
Right. But you got to start somewhere. And okay, when people start to look at the entire operation. Now, listen, when NASCAR decided they wanted to ban Confederate flags at tracks and events, I said immediately, this is the kind of watershed moment that actually makes me think that Dan Snyder might not even have a choice in this matter. It might become an untenable situation simply in America and in the world to be operating with a racist slur name.
You actually believe that this could be the moment? You actually
What I'm saying is that, dog, they pulled down Confederate flags at NASCAR.
They did.
That is the biggest deal I've ever heard of in the South. It really is. NASCAR was the last bastion of any sort of respectability that you could even walk into and see something like that. You know? If NASCAR is going to do that out of what is effectively public pressure, even though there's a business decision involved, the Confederate flag?
And there it
is. Bro, they can change that stupid team. They can change that stupid football team's name.
But there it is. The Confederate flag is going to tick off some of their fan base and their loyalists and whatnot, and that's all well and good. But NASCAR has one of the oldest fan bases. And I think they read the room and realized that if they're going to expand their audience in any way, if they're going to survive the next 10 to 15 years and actually have an audience, then they are going to have to understand that the new generation is more socially conscious. I do think they looked at the fact and said, this won't affect our bottom line. It won't. Especially right now, we can't even have fans in the stands. I don't think the same can be said for Dan Snyder and Washington. There will be financial ramifications for changing his name and changing the logo. And that's just the bottom line. And so I'm not nearly as optimistic that he will be willing to say, this is going to cost me money, but it's the right thing to do anyway. Because it's been the right thing to do for how many years, Clinton?
This is where we differ. I don't necessarily know if it's going to be his choice. This is what I'm talking about. If public pressure can pull down a Confederate flag at a NASCAR track, it daggone sure might have an effect on a football team that is garbage, you know?
Trash.
It's not like this is some big-time program in America. Nobody cares about that team, including people from the city, because they can't deal with it. Coming up, Soraya McDonald. She's the smartest person at the Undefeated. She's going to tell you about that. You're listening to The Intersection. I'm Clinton Yates. She's Elle Duncan. It's ESPN Radio. You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. Of course, the program is presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests on the program appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You want to holler at us? Hit us up. 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. At Clinton Yates, that's where you can find me on Twitter. Watch yourself. You might get wrecked. At L Duncan ESPN, that's where you can find her on Twitter. But joining us right now is somebody I've known for a long time. She's the smartest person at the Undefeated. I say that all the time. And something I just learned today, she's got a Wikipedia page. Sidebar, she was also a finalist for the 2020 Pulitzer Prize for Criticism.
Yeah, sidebar. That's but Wikipedia, Soraya more impressive.
Soraya, how are you?
What up?
I mean, I'm saying, I was like, you? I Googled it, and like it went to the wiki, and I was like, oh, dang, Soraya's got a wiki? Like, all right.
And also a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize.
I mean, you know, we know that. You know what I'm saying? We know that. Because that's what she'd be doing. But, Soraya, I just wanted to ask you, because when it comes to black voices in America, yours is one I go to in general. They've had so much stuff. The sports world, you know what I'm saying? The regular world, so to speak. All the intersections. There's so many things going on. There's a lot to digest. So I come to you. Where are you at right now? Just in terms of your state.
I'm in my apartment, like physically?
Yeah, no. Nah, just what you doing with your mind. Where you at? What's going on?
Okay. Well, I'm in my apartment in Brooklyn. Tonight, I'm probably going to end up rewatching The Five Bloods again. Just because it's such a dense movie that I don't think you can quite get everything, even in like the first or second screening. So I'm probably going to do that. There have been fireworks going off every night. I guess these are Juneteenth fireworks.
air quotes.
Ready? Yeah. And just trying to stay on top of everything because there's just so much all the time.
Yeah, Soraya, how exhausted are you? I've asked that of all of my black friends and colleagues. Like, how tired are you?
I'm just glad there's an end to this week finally. I don't know if anybody else has said this, but it just sort of feels like you're trying to maneuver your brain through sludge. You're trying to like hold space somewhere for like things that have happened that are really, really tragic. Not just with George Floyd, but also with the death of Breonna Taylor and the fact that the police officers who killed her have not been charged in her death. Right? There's Rayshard Brooks. there's always something. And, of course, like all of this is happening in the midst of a really deadly pandemic that disproportionately affects African Americans. It's also, we have an election coming up in November. Although, even with the primaries that we've seen thus far, particularly in Georgia, there are also folks raising the alarm about Kentucky because it's closed down so many of its polling stations. And we saw, you had people waiting for 8 hours in Georgia just to vote in the primary. And it looks like something similar may happen in the upcoming Kentucky primary. So there's just a lot.
It is a lot. You're listening to The Intersection with Clinton Yates and Elle Duncan. Soraya McDonald joins us. But, like, from a work standpoint, you grind on a level of the culture that you're paying attention to that is very intense. And the intensity on the world has turned up right now. I mean, what are you even focused on? You know what I'm saying? In terms of like how you manage your gaze, because for me, self-care has been frankly just not watching the news, and kind of staying out of the news.
Yeah.
But like, that's kind of what you're trafficking in. And that's why you're getting these awards. I mean, how are you staying sane on top of having to follow
all
this.
It's difficult. Yeah, I mean, I pride myself on being able to take in a bunch of different things, because I want to be able to write with as much context as I possibly can. I think for me, sometimes self-care is just a matter of, okay, maybe I just can't listen to the news today, this morning, like right when I wake up. That's not always a good thing to do. The other thing I try to do is cook for myself. That's one of my favorite things to do. So, even if it's like something really simple. So tonight, like I made like a cabbage stir fry. It's one of the things that I've become sort of really attuned to, I think, because I'm spending so much time in the house. Is just, like the way like different things affect my mood. And, I realized I feel a lot better when I'm eating more fresh fruits and vegetables.
That's real.
So even though it can be, it can be a challenge, because I think when you have like all of these different sort of emotional stressors coming, from what's happening in the world, it's really easy to turn to the comfort food. But then, at least for me, I end up like waking up feeling sluggish the next day. But when I, when I'm making something for myself and I'm taking the time to chop everything and I've got my mise en place, that's like my little happy place.
Lovely.
Yeah, you have to have that your escape. And it is. Cooking to me is always a way to shut my brain off as well. You are listening to The Intersection with Clinton Yates and Elle Duncan. We're on the line with Soraya McDonald. You actually wrote an article that is amazing and that we're actually featuring in our Undefeated special airing Wednesday on ESPN at 8 p.m. Eastern. Shameless plug. Called Why We Can't Stop Thinking About George Floyd's Neck. Soraya, what is the significance of the neck as it relates to black culture?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of different contexts, right? If you think about a sort of like positive context, one of the like classic songs that you will almost always hear if you're at an HBCU football game is Talking Out the Side of Your Neck, right? Which basically just means like you're talking mess. Like you can't back up whatever it is that you're saying. But then there's also, a much more serious context, when it comes to thinking about black lives. Because it is such a point of vulnerability, for humans, regardless of what race they are. These fireworks are really going.
Juneteenth player, 2020, you ain't about it? What you doing? I'm messing around. Go ahead.
But because, it's one of the most vulnerable spots on our body, over and over again throughout history, it's become a point used to control people, whether, you're looking at the sort of tools that were used. You would have enslaved people march in this formation called a coffle, and usually they were linked together by chains that were hooked to their necks, like leashes. You would have folks who maybe tried to escape, and if they were caught and brought back, one of the ways that slaveholders would subdue them would be to place an iron collar around their neck that usually had spikes that went up and outward, so that you couldn't actually lay down to sleep. If you tried to run away, those extremities would get caught on branches, and possibly break your neck. And then, of course, once you start moving into the Jim Crow era, we have all of these images of black people being lynched, and lynched doesn't necessarily mean hanged, but usually that was part of the process, right? You'd have someone who was who was tortured in some horrific way. Maybe they were dragged behind a vehicle or beaten or, you know, any number of those things. But usually what ended up happening is that you have the body of this person who's being pursued by members of their communities. You know, often, you know, those people included law enforcement officers who are then hanged publicly for everyone to see. In fact, one of our colleagues at The Undefeated, Jesse Washington, read this really moving, incredibly painful article about the man for whom he was named, you know, because that is what happened to him. And, you know, this instance, you know, I think every instance of lynching is obviously horrible. I think this is one of the ones that stands out because, you know, you had city officials basically telling people, well, make sure you don't destroy the tree.
Wow.
And so
it's a lot.
You know, when we're thinking about that, and we're thinking about, you know, the video of George Floyd's death, and how incredibly vulnerable he is. He's calling out for his mother, you know, he's basically begging for his life. Again, we're at that sort of fulcrum of subjugation and vulnerability. Because this police officer is basically digging his knee into George Floyd's neck.
Oh, I mean, it's heavy, but it's real. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
To remind y'all that this stuff is no joke. Sarai McDonald, thank you for joining us, Sarai.
Well, thank you.
Of course. Stay safe. Cook your food. Stay away from the fireworks. We need you out here. Exactly. Appreciate you. Have a good weekend. All right. You know, I mean, we bring this stuff up because I want y'all to understand. These are the things that affect all the other things. We don't just pop out of wombs and start breakdancing a Soldier Boy. You know what I'm saying? Or whatever. Like, all the goofy things you think you see about the culture that you think happen with such ease. That's not how it goes, yo. Nope. We've been dealing with a lot. Mm-hmm. We done made it. Went to the daggone site's name, The Undefeated.
Hello.
That's the whole point.
We will
coming
not
up.
Be defeated.
Correct. What do you expect from the NBA on the social justice front, L? I know you plugged into the league. With the oh-so-great Atlanta Hawks? You're listening
you know
to The
what?
Intersection on ESPN Radio. The
They're
ESPN
as good
app.
As the Godim. Wizards, bruh. Wizards.
Zardos. You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. My name is Clinton Yates. Her name is Elle Duncan. The show is presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests appear on the show via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Hit us up, yo. How you doing? How you maintaining? How's your mentals?
Protect
That's a good
them.
Question. Mm-hmm. You know, got to protect them. 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. Great way to protect your mentals? Never at me, but I'm on Twitter, at Clinton Yates. She's on Twitter, at L Duncan ESPN. The NBA, though, on its way back, we'll see. We got a little scuttlebutt we got to discuss here, L, because your man's Kyrie is actually making some sense these days. When he's not talking about flat earth, he's breaking down what he thinks could be a very powerful moment in terms of what NBA players do. Now, my feeling on this is twofold. Number one, there's the cultural issue in terms of folks actually paying attention to us. Black Lives Matter, all this stuff, I'm only generalizing for the purposes of brevity, has actually opened people's eyes to what it is black folks deal with. That's one part of this. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the NBA's got a rack of brothers in it. So self-interest is part of that as well. But the other part is that, like, with COVID and the labor factor, yo, basketball players are more valuable to the NBA than football players are to the NFL. Mm-hmm. There's less of them, and that's just how it works.
And they're front-facing. You don't see the faces of NFL players. Yeah.
Exactly. But in the hierarchy of labor forces, mm-hmm. there are technically less NBA players for less spaces, so they are more valuable. So, correct. If they do something, it's going to be easier to make an impact because it takes less people to make as big an impact. So there's a couple things at play here with why I think these players are thinking, yo, we got a bigger moment here. And maybe we should do a little bit something more than just ask for a couple games to get back before we get to the playoffs. I understand this mentality, even if the messenger, L, is not somebody that we take seriously. Where are you on this?
I just, I guess I'm not clear on what they're asking for. Like, it just all seems very vague. It's like they're asking for support, but maybe this is just because we're not privy yet in the media to what exactly they're asking for. Maybe they're meeting in the coalition and they've got an entire list of demands or whatever that might be. But, you know, this idea that you're going to be able to wrap up systemic racism and dismantling it in the next few months so you can get back to the next season in December. I mean, this is a marathon. This thing's going to take years and years and years. It took 400 years to put it in place. It's going to take many years to start to dismantle it. So I guess what I'm asking for from Kyrie and Avery, because I think that I appreciate the genuineness of what they're trying to do, and I appreciate the earnest with which they're trying to do it, but I'm just not clear on what it is that they're looking for. Like, what are you asking for from your owners? Because you've certainly been given enough leeway to sort of use your platforms without fear of retribution, right? The NBA has long been the first league and for a long time the only league that allowed their players to use their platforms in that way. So that's my confusion, Clinton. Like, what do you want? You want donations? Do you want them to lobby? Like, what are you looking for specifically? That might help me figure out whether, you know, this is more important than playing and using your platform in that way.
I don't think that Kyrie brought this up with the notion that anybody's going to actually sit out any games. I think what he's saying is, yo, we need to be a little bit more together about whatever it is we're talking about, because our collective power here is at its highest point.
Because we need to use our leverage a little bit more.
Yeah, and it's like, you know what I'm saying? We're all going to be at the same place. You know what I'm saying? Let's at least consider whether or not we even want to do this. And if the conversation then comes to, well, you know what? We might make some other changes. And I'm not saying that this is related to anything like college football, because obviously these guys are getting paid. But you look at how some of these teams have been cracking back on their coaches. Like, you know what? We ain't doing that no more. How about that? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
hey, we just
sure.
not going to play if you don't get it together. Yeah. And that's kind of where the vein is of this for me. And I could be misreading Kyrie overall, but I also don't expect everybody to have everything all figured out at once. You know?
Sure.
And if you start somewhere with like, dog, you realize what we got in our hands? We're not just going to throw this away so we can spend it 3 months in Disney World.
Sure.
That's not the move, you know? And so for me, this is pretty refreshing from Kyrie, because it signals some level of larger understanding about what's going on, you know? Because it ain't just about basketball. It ain't just about COVID. It's about these dudes who literally are the ones that make the league go. And if they're never going to feel that they're going to get the respect for that they deserve, not the money, y'all, the respect, because that matters. Think about how much money everybody's making, including the owners. This is the time to do it. I ain't mad at that.
Yeah, I think the problem is that, to your point, it's a little bit of who the messenger is, right? And when you're most known as being like a flat earth denier, I think that, you know, again, I appreciate what Avery Bradley's trying to do, but he ain't the Laker that has the power to do and say what needs to happen. I was encouraged. I talked to Lloyd Pierce, who's the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, just yesterday, actually, because he hosted, him and Dan Quinn hosted a panel for high school kids where they sort of talked about, race, what's next, passing the baton. And he told me that he's actually incredibly encouraged by this NBA coaches coalition that they put together. He was like, when I tell you this is not in any way like you have to sort of sign on because you can't be the one that didn't. He was like, these coaches are calling me every day with ideas. He was like, they are implementing plans. At least the 22 that are going to Orlando are implementing as many plans about how they can use this opportunity to help the country and to further the process of, you know, of advancing some of these issues for Black people as they are and restarting the league and playing games. So he was like, I'm very encouraged by how excited they are. This is not me tracking people down. This is not me asking for their time. They're the ones that are really full throttle, all in, and fully aware of the opportunity that they have.
That's what's up. I'm here for that. I'm as interested, though, in what the NBA populace looks like in between each guy. Because guess what? Not all Black folks think the same way. You'd be surprised. Ask your real Black friends. They'll tell you. And so when this comes up in the NBA, it's going to be fascinating to see how they get it together, because that's what they do. LaChyna Robinson, she's coming up. You're listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. I'm Clinton Yates. She's Elle Duncan. It's ESPN Radio. It's The Intersection on ESPN Radio. My name is Clinton Yates. Her name is Elle Duncan. We're on the ESPN app at SiriusXM Channel 80. Of course, the program is presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can reach us at 1-888-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. You can find me on Twitter at Clinton Yates, and you can find L on Twitter at L Duncan, ESPN.
All right, Clinton. So we had some big news out of the WNBA this week. That is that Renee Montgomery of the Atlanta Dream has decided that instead of participating in the condensed 22-game season in Bradenton, Florida, she's going to sit this season out, essentially pulling a Maya Moore, and focus her efforts on social justice reform. And I thought I had a very mixed reaction to this, and the first person I wanted to talk to about this was LaChyna Robinson, A, because LaChyna's a friend and such an advocate for black women and black journalists, but also because LaChyna, who's been working at ESPN for over a decade now, is a WNBA analyst and for many, many years was the face of the Atlanta Dream for their television and radio broadcast. So hi, LaChyna. Thank you for being here.
Hey, Elle. Thanks for having me. Hey, Clinton. How y'all doing?
What's going on? We good. Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. That's right. We got a few hours left, and we are going to milk this for every – I mean, we are celebrating to the very end. So
you know it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you said sort of milk this, because here was my mixed feelings about Renee Montgomery. At first I thought, oh, my God, the selflessness. Like, how incredible that she has found this purpose and that she wants to do this. But then immediately I thought, why is it always black people that are having to sacrifice? Like, she's worked her whole life to get to this position. She's a NCAA champion. She's a WNBA champion. And she's going to have to sit out because, you know, she feels, or at least I hope she doesn't feel, that this is a moment in time that she has to capitalize in, because maybe people won't care by the time the WNBA season is over. But I had a chance to talk with her today, LaChyna, and my views changed a little bit. What was your reaction when you found out she'd be doing this?
Man, I felt a great deal of respect for Renee in that moment. You know, the one thing about WNBA players that people don't recognize is, number one, it's a league that's 80% black women, right? Number two, it's a league of women that have gotten used to sacrifice, to be honest with you, Elle. Like, that's kind of where they live. I mean, keep in mind, they play in the WNBA 5 months a year. Then they go overseas for 7 months to make a living. So we're talking about some women that are powerful, that are resilient, and that have, in my opinion, been in the forefront of the social justice movement the entire time. I mean, you take this back to 2016, to the Minnesota Lynx, who were the first group to publicly, at least on the athlete side, to acknowledge Philando Castile, Alton Sterling. I mean, that was Maya Moore and Lindsey Whalen. Rebecca Brunson, Simone Augustus, who wore shirts to their press conference that said, "Change starts with us." On the back, it was like, "Black Lives Matter." After that was the ESPYs, when Chris Paul and those guys stood up. So this is a league of women who are used to sacrificing for the good of the game, for the good of the community, and have always used their voices to speak out for what's right at the time when it's most important. And the thing about Renee is she has always been the kind of person that, you know, she's real. She's true to who she is. And it doesn't matter what other people think about Renee. And I say point guards are always like this, right? Point guards are the player on the floor that, like, they don't care. You know, the Sue Bird, the Carol Lawson, the Lindsey Whalen, like, they're going to be who they are. Renee Montgomery has that. And, you know, she's been consistent in what she's done here in the Atlanta community. So, no, it didn't surprise me at all. But I agree with her, Elle, that this is a moment. And while I do think collective voices are important, there are people that want to be in the community. Like, the impact of having these athletes in the community, touching the community, where they can be visible, where they can have conversations with officials, where they can be front and center and present, is something that people are missing right now.
LaChyna, last summer I got to spend some time with Maya Moore. She was in D.C. for the Congressional Black Caucus, and she spoke at the Marshall Project. And I got to hear how she had really had a transformation, not just in terms of her specific case, but part of it was that she was educating herself about how the justice system worked. And she talked about how she wasn't just sort of on her, I don't want to say bully pulpit, but she wasn't just standing up there to say, "Hey, get my friend out of prison." She was trying to educate people about what the system is and how we get to the point that we do in terms of certain things. And I guess I just wonder, as much as the WNBA has been on the forefront of things, the WNBA is also a very global league. Like, what, mm-hmm. How has Maya Moore's message resonated just in the daily lives of the players in the league she was in, as opposed to just everybody else who are fans and who are in her communities, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think that you can go against expectations, you know, and that you have to take the time to dig deep to figure out what you're passionate about and what your life's work is, right? Like, sometimes as athletes, you know, you get past the basketball, and then, you know, there's the schedule. There's AAU, and then you go to high school, and then you go to college, and then you go to the pros. And for Maya Moore, it's a championship every other year, so she's been on this regimen. And then she finally had some time to sit down and reflect. And, you know, she talked about picking up some different hobbies and just learning more about herself. And I believe that it was in that time that Maya found a deeper calling. And that's the message, I think, more than anything that she's sending is, listen, she probably could have won the last two championships or this summer and last summer, you know, as she's been on the basketball court. But there's more to life than that. And I think as an athlete, you don't always have that time. And if you allow society to put their value on you as just an athlete, then you don't find all these other places that you can have an impact on the world. And that's why I think more than an athlete has become the hashtag. And you see them wearing the shirts because they are multifaceted. So her message was very powerful, and it went beyond just trying to get Jonathan Irons out of prison. It was, what is your life work? What is your purpose? And what are you willing to sacrifice to get outside of the box that the world has put you in?
You are listening to The Intersection with Clinton Yates and Elle Duncan on ESPN Radio. Joining us right now, LaChyna Robinson, ESPN women's basketball analyst, host of Around the Rim podcast. It's fire. And what LaChyna would probably never say, but I'll say because I'm her friend and I'll brag on her, is that LaChyna is one of those people that's always advocating. Like, she's the person behind the scenes asking the questions and fighting the good fight and has been doing it for a long time. She does it with her mentor program, where she tries to help young black women sort of find their way through the broadcasting world. And LaChyna, I'm interested in your perspective on a broader scale, sort of women's, black women's role in all of these movements, because for so many years we've understood that the black woman has sort of overlooked in the feminist movement, overlooked, and in some of these movements, overlooked, and even in the Black Lives Matter movement, somewhat overlooked. What do you think it is that has allowed for so long black women to have this voice, but also essentially be stifled by it?
Yeah, Elle, that's a great question, you know, and I appreciate your kind words and friend right back at you, because I cannot even begin. You have been not only the most supportive person for me personally, but so many of us out there, and, you know, just using your voice for change, and love you to death. But, you know, honestly, and I think about this when I talk about the WNBA, you know, people assume the WNBA is not more popular because it's women's basketball. But I look at the fact that it's also 80% black women. And what we've been told for so long by turning on the television or looking on the magazine is we're not the standard of beauty. We're not invested in. We're not covered in the media, sports media or general media. Like, we are the double minority that is often left out of two conversations, one first because of gender and the other because of race. And, you know, that's why I think it's so powerful what the WNBA is doing right now, because they have the most to lose, but the least to lose, if that makes sense. You know, like, no one is betting on them anyway, you know? So it's like, hey, let's get out here and let's stand up for what we believe, because nobody's checking for us. And I just believe that, you know, the black man, definitely, I get it. Like, this is about black people as a whole. But I really think that the black woman's forgotten. We're not heard. We're not seen. We're not the lead, you know. And it's something that has to change, bottom line. And that is why I created Rising Media Stars, is because there just needs to be more black women being that voice. And that's why it's important for everyone to try to see the WNBA in the lens of it being a sport. Take away the gender, take away the race, but just taking who these women are as athletes on the court. But then you look at who they are in their communities and that they own businesses. I mean, they're so amazing and dynamic. And they go live in Russia for 7 months a year just to make a living. You know what I mean? I mean, you look at these millions of dollars. Like, look at the situation that's happened now with the WNBA and the NBA, right? Okay, this single site situation for the NBA is going to pay off mightily for the players, right? We're talking about millions of dollars. The average WNBA salary might be $100,000, $110,000. They got 77% to move forward on the vote for this season. That's the average salary, $110,000, around there. Don't quote me. Somewhere around there. So these women are going to this single site. They're changing their lives for 3 months. They are risking of getting infected with the coronavirus. All of these different things for way less money than the NBA is. And I know it's not all about money, but it just speaks volumes to who they are. But black women continue to be the sacrifice, not get the same level of support, attention. And that's why I've been covering women's basketball since I started in this, because it is really my dream to not only promote these women and hopefully people will look differently at black women and hear their voices and see them, but also so we can celebrate them because they deserve it.
Thanks, Tatiana. I mean, you know, you got your friends on, L. They out here rocking it. You know, I mean, this is excellent. I'm having a great time.
Listen, LaChina is the queen. Rising Media Stars is amazing. If you're interested, if there's a young journalist or you know a young black journalist that's interested sort of breaking into this industry but doesn't know how to get their foot in the door, I would check out LaChina on Instagram and Twitter, also her website. It's LaChinaRobinson.com, right, LaChina?
Yes, but I will take you. If you want to go to risingmediastars.org, I'd rather you learn about that than me. And you can donate. We're official nonprofit, 501c3. 100% volunteer organization, and we love various types of support, even if it's just swinging by and say, hey, we see you. Like, these young women definitely could use it.
Thank you for everything you do, LaChina. You're the best.
I appreciate you guys having me. Keep rocking. Loving the show. Let's do this.
Let's do it, boo.
Let's get it. Coming up. Gonna talk about baseball, y'all. Y'all think y'all was gonna get through a whole show without your boy talking about the hardball diamond? Are you crazy? Do you know who you're dealing with? It's the middle of the summer. They're not even playing. You know I had to say something. It's the Intersection on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. The Intersection. I'm Clinton Yates. She's Elle Duncan. We're on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. The program is presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests have appeared on the show via the Shell Brentel Performance Line. Might as well go down to guests right now. Thanks to Imani Jones. From the Right Time with Bomani Jones. That was fantastic. Tell me more about LaChina right quick, Elle.
Yeah, LaChina is amazing. She is a WNBA analyst. She was a former basketball player in college and coached for a little bit at Georgia Tech. I've known her for many, many years. And like I said, most of what she does is, outside of being super talented on TV, is really just advocate for women. She's an inspirational speaker. She travels the country doing that. Like, she's just an all-around baddie. So glad she could join us.
I'm sure she has a Wikipedia page, as does Sarai McDonald from the Undefeated Culture Critic, who joined us as well.
Why are you so obsessed with it? I have
because
a Wikipedia.
It's tight. Because you...
I have a Wikipedia. Clinton, you can make a Wikipedia, like, right now. It takes 10 seconds.
I don't want a Wikipedia. I like hers. That's what I was saying. I just didn't know, and it was cool.
I'm going to make you a Wikipedia, bro.
Please don't do that. We are way off track here. Because then these people are going to start changing it and putting up all sorts of stupid stuff, and that's not what we need. Okay? What we do need to do is talk about baseball.
Okay.
Because something came up with my man Joe Adell, who most of y'all listening probably don't know who he is because he plays outfield for the Angels and he's a brother. So y'all don't know. He spoke to the Undefeated because he's been doing a series with the Undefeated, and he talked about something that we all know about, but it affects baseball differently. When players are scouted in different sports, you'd use different verbiage depending on what you see on the player. And oftentimes in baseball, black players are referred to often as raw, athletic, speed guys. My fingers are moving very quickly beside the side of my head. And so when those things get written down and ingrained in the culture of how you speak and the coding and the way that you describe guys, well, it turns out that a lot of black players don't end up really playing in a position other than outfield. How about that? And on top of that, they are limited from advancing because guess what? Nobody thinks they can play. Because when it comes to brothers, the words skilled, sharp, gritty. You don't use those words with brothers playing baseball?
Right.
Now, the reason why this affects me so much is because you have to understand what the institutional lineage is of management, front office, and so forth. You're a player that manages to hang around the game on the infield or as a catcher, people will say, oh, that guy's pretty smart. Maybe he can coach. All right, you get into the coaching realms, then maybe you move on up to management. Move on up to management, maybe you move on up to the front office. But because of what Joe brought up, I had to have a discussion on Twitter about this. And it's real. At the lowest levels of the game, there's something about the sociology of baseball scouting where coaches, who are still largely white in most of these communities all the way on up to the travel game because it's money related, don't get me off on that. They'll see a kid. You know, with your speed, you really could do us better on the team in the outfield.
Of course.
That's how
it starts. Cover more ground. Mm-hmm.
Cover more ground. Speed guy. Get him out there. Now, what it's really saying is, or the effect it has is, we don't think you have the mental quickness to play the infield. Or we're not willing to work to teach you the same way we're willing to, A, teach somebody else, or B, let somebody else fail until they learn. That's another thing. And how this affects the game all the way on up to the big leagues is super real. Go ahead, y'all. Hit me up. Name me your favorite black third baseman right now. You have 1 minute, and you can use Wikipedia. You ain't going to find many. Just think about that. And think about how that still affects what we look at on the field. You want to tell me, oh, there's not enough brothers in the bigs. Well, Dag, if you're going to make everybody play for three spots on every single team, what you think? That's not how this works if you want actual progress. And it was a fascinating thing to bring up because so many guys started sending me stories about how their baseball careers ended because of things like this. Guy wrote a story, a heartbreaking story. He said when he played Pony League, for those who don't know, Pony League comes in between Little League and high school, basically. He said every time he struck out, the coaches would joke at him, well, football season's coming up. Mm-hmm. He hadn't played organized football to that point in his life. And he ended the tweet by saying, I think they were trying to be nice to me, but they didn't know that I really wanted to play baseball. And I just, I didn't really know. It was heartbreaking. You know, I played competitive ball. I mean, I'm referring to competitive ball as in just like when you play. From Little League to high school, I never played the outfield because I couldn't track a fly ball. And as a player, I never thought about that. Playing infield and how much it I love the game because I played infield because that's what the part where the stuff happens and that's where you learn everything, not the major leagues, the game. And when I sit down and I think about like all the people that I was writing to that day, major scouts, people who run scouting organizations and services, were like, bro, I never thought once that the words I used in the specific scouting report could affect a kid's future. And I'm thinking to myself, number one, how would you never think that? What do you think they got the daggone reports for? And number two, when you want to understand what goes on with black baseball players, it ain't all just about the fact that scholarships and money aren't the motivation. It's the grassroots level of the game where you kill a kid's motivation. Because you're making him do something either he's not good at or doesn't want to do, and you're not going to teach him how to do it in order to enjoy the game that he wants. It's heartbreaking when you really think about how easy it is. That mini microaggression, now, mini word, can change a whole career, and it can change what you, change what you like overall.
I got to be honest with you, though, Clinton. Like, I played infield my entire life too. I played fast pitch from the time I was, a little kid till high school. And I didn't know it required tons of acumen to play. Like, to me, the two most important things to playing the infield are your reflexes and your instinct. Like, pick it up and get it. How quick are your reflexes? Bro, I played the hot corner dog. Like, that thing was coming. I didn't have time to think about whether my athletic to think about the trajectory. It was like bam, bam, and out.
I'm with you. But in the game, we're still doing that.
It matters. Yeah, it matters.
We're still talking ourselves. Excuse me. They're still talking us out of the game.
Yep.
It's just one of those things that if a big leaguer is still talking about this stuff, and we worried about whether or not scholarships are going to change. Right. You think scholarships are going to change what some kid in ninth grade does when the coach embarrasses him and sticks him in the outfield when he's never played it in his life?
Correct.
Nah, man. We got to do better by that.
Right.
I'm actually upset about this, but whatever.
I see. Your depth perception's not great. Mine wasn't either. And that's all right, Clinton, because we belong on the infield.
Thank you. On the dirt. You know who played on the dirt in high school, by the way? The rookie of the year in the NFL. Kyler Murray,
correct,
in case you didn't know that.
Run it. Hey, Mookie Betts is actually a second baseman. Hey, actually.
Right? Don't get me started on that. He didn't even go to college because he was going to be like Tony Kemp. Anyway, Freddie and Chris Simmons are coming up next. You've been listening to The Intersection on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Black baseball players, do better by them. It's ESPN
Radio. We'll see you next Thursday.